Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have a very, very special and important person at the Orthodox Union, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, Executive Vice President Emeritus, one of the real leaders of the Jewish community, and a good dear friend. Rabbi Weinreb, how are you today?
Thank you very much. I'm fine. Baruch Hashem. How are you, Steve?
Thank God. I am doing very well. And read your article about Ben-Zion Schenker, and that's what we're going to talk about for a few minutes today. A legend, an incredible person, and you wrote Ben-Zion Schenker, a tribute to a national treasure, a modern-day sweet singer of Israel. So, I mean, I know that your family has a very strong connection to the Mudgets world, so maybe you could explain that a little bit to the listening audience.
Okay. The Mudgets is a Hasidic movement. Today it's based in Bnei Brak in Israel, but it was based for about a century in pre-Holocaust in Poland. This is a dynasty of several generations of Hasidic rabbis, and it's most famous for its emphasis upon music. This Hasidus looked at music as a derech avoda, as a way of worship. The second rabbi of Mudgetts, his name was Rabbi Shaul Taub, was my wife's grandfather. My wife is Chavi, and her father was a son of Rav Shaul. Rav Shaul was one of the major composers. He composed about 1,000 different nikunim, different Hasidic melodies, some of which are so popular that people just don't realize who composed it. It's just sung in all kinds of shuls all across the world. Ben-Zion Schenker, as a very young boy, 14 or 15 years old, was brought by his father, this is in the early years of the war, in the early 1940s, to a tish of the Mudgetts Rebbe, Rav Shaul, who had escaped from Poland and spent the Holocaust years in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Ben-Zion Schenker was a child prodigy of music. He sang in the choirs of various chazanim, and even at that young age, he was able to read musical notes. When he came to visit the Rebbe had with him a notebook of music, but the Rebbe himself was not a trained musician and could not read musical notes. And here he sees that this 14-year-old boy was able to read musical notes. So he said to him in Yiddish, "Kennst leinen Noten? You can read notes of music?" And Ben-Zion said yes, and that began the connection where Ben-Zion, as a teenager, became the musical secretary for this Rebbe, Hasidish Rebbe, who was a composer, a very prolific composer.
That's amazing. I always wondered how it came about that he became the composer, because I knew he wasn't part of the dynasty of the Mudgetts dynasty per se, but I guess he was a Mudgetts of Chassid himself, right?
Well, to say the least, it was a Mudgetts of Chassid. He just revered this Rebbe and this Rebbe's son and grandson, and now great grandson, who are the Rabbeim of Mudgetts down to this day, this very day. So that's how he became a Mudgetts Chassid. Now it's interesting. Not all Mudgetts and Nigunim are written by the Rabbeim of Mudgetts, because the Rabbeim would encourage their Chassidim to also compose. So Ben-Zion really is one of a line of Hasidic composers who are not in the family, so to speak, but they are affiliated with the Mudgetts Chotzer, with the Mudgetts court, so to speak. Most of those were either died long before the Holocaust or were killed in the Holocaust. Ben-Zion is hopefully not the last such composer, a Chassid who's a composer, but not a Rebbe himself.
So today you're saying that they still have people who are out there. So you said that someone composed 1,000 nigunim and so on. I mean, are these available online, or how do you get them?
It's really interesting. Hasidim aren't known for their abilities to keep historical records, etc. But Ben-Zion was a professional musicologist. He was trained at the New York Conservatory of Music. He really was an expert in classical music and in the music of other Hasidic dynasties and in cantorial music. But what he did a long time ago, he began to collect and to annotate all the nigunim he could possibly learn and to put them in note form. And in Israel, over the past, I would say, 6 or 8 years, they've established a website which tries to track and document and preserve all of these thousands of nigunim. And this is available on the website. It's Modzitz, M-O-D-Z-I-T-Z .co.il. And on that website, you can find not thousands yet, but hundreds of nigunim documented, sung, recorded, with little notes telling you the story or the history about the composer, that type of thing. And that's still a work in progress. But eventually, they hope to document all the nigunim. Velvel Pasternak, who is very close to
very close.
Right. So he's very close, was very close to Benzion Schenker and to Modzitz. His father, Olav Shalom, whom I met years and years ago through family connections, was a Modzitz chassid of the old Modzitz Rebbe, going back before Upshol, going back to World War I times. And so he has taken, I understand that he has taken upon himself the task of preserving all of Benzion Schenker's nigunim. How many he wrote, you'll hear estimates which range from 500 nigunim that Benzion wrote to 1,000. I don't think 1,000 is an exaggeration. The man was close to 92 when he passed away. He still composed nigunim in a week before he passed away. He passed away suddenly. He just didn't wake up on Sunday morning. And so he's composing nigunim since he's 15. You do the math. If he's doing, he composed for every yomtiv, 2, 3, 4 nigunim for Yom Noroim, 10 nigunim for weddings, nigunim, etc. It could easily be 1,000 or close to it. So I understand that Velvel Pasternak is going to commit to collecting them all.
So let me ask you this. So he writes a nigun for yomtiv. Now, do they then start to sing it in the Modzitz or Shtibel that Yontif, and it becomes incorporated into the prayers, or is it, what happens to it?
Okay, well, you know, it's kind of different when the Rebbe does it. The Rebbe now in Bnei Brak is Chaim Scholl Taub, who's a composer himself and composes Nigunim in that way. But what Benzion would do is, I know this personally because from the time that I was married, which is now 50 plus years ago, I davened for many years in the Modzitz Shtibel in Crown Heights and then in Flatbush and listened to Benzion. So what he would do is would sing nigunim of the Modzitz repertoire, but also introduce new nigunim of his own. He would introduce them either on Yom Noroim or Shon Yom Kippur, or sometimes he would just get up on the Shabbos and they would ask him to daven, and he would introduce a new nigun. Some of them caught on immediately. I remember distinctly when he introduced the nigun Yotzis Alayach Elokoyach at a wedding. It just caught on.
Now this nigun is the Yotzis, that one?
Yeah, right. Yotzis Alayach
Elokoyach. Everybody knows that nigun. Okay, great.
Everybody knows that nigun, but he wrote dozens of such nigunim. Some caught on, some didn't. Why? It's hard to know, but there's something about a nigun of his that just touches the hearts and souls of people, and they sing it and then carry it further. There's so many nigunim of that sort, but his most famous, arguably his most famous nigun is the one he set, is one of the many he set to the words of Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem Ro'i Lo Echzor, which is sung traditionally at Cholish Yudis.
So which one is it? Which nigun is it?
Mizmor LeDavid,
Every shul has that as one of their three.
That's one of the three. And so he composed that, I don't know, very early in his career, very early in his career, and it just caught on. It's a beautiful tune, and it fits the words beautifully, and it just caught on, and you'll hear it sung all over. There's a Sephardi shul near me in Yerushalayim, which sings that niggun, and it's just part of their repertoire as well.
And so one of the things also I think about Ben Zion Schenker, and I remember when I grew up as a kid in Crown Heights, I remember going to the Madrasa Shtibel, Ben Zion Schenker davening there, and then later on even davening in the Aguda where my in-laws davened. He would daven there for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So
right.
I heard him, you know, and he had a very sweet voice. But one of the things about his nigunim, I guess, is that unlike a lot of songs today, the words really and the melody really are one. They fit. Not, you know, like you, today you have some nigunim or you have, you know, songs that people make up, you know, Jewish songs, and the words just really don't fit. But, you know, and it's a serious song and they're singing it to a rock beat or something like that. But with Ben Zion, it was really just the opposite. The melody actually was reflective of what the tefillah was, right?
Yeah, they say, I mean, the Yiddish expression for that is, it really captures it. In Yiddish, they say that a niggun darf oisteichen de Werder. A niggun has to interpret the words. That's the whole purpose of a niggun. That's the purpose of the Nusach HaTfila, of being able to take a melody or a chant or a tune and use that to help express the words. Now, as you know, the words of the davening, the words of Tehillim, can have many, many interpretations. And the skill of a good composer of nigunim is to be able to take a pasuk or take a chapter like Mizmor LaDavid and teich ois, interpret the words through the music. And I would say that that was his greatest skill, Ben Zion's. His ability to take words and just make them fit. Even the Yosef Salayach tune, which is really a relatively simple tune compared to some more complicated ones, it teiches ois in Yiddish. It interprets the words in a very, very special way.
That's a great thing because you're not seeing that. And now, what in his own personal life, and what did he do for a living? He didn't make money. He didn't make that much money off this.
Well, it's very interesting. He made no money off of his music. Whatever money he did make, he donated to the Majitza Rebbe, who has the yeshiva in Bnei Brak. He wouldn't take any of that for himself, not the proceeds of the records or any other royalties or whatever that he was entitled to. He didn't keep it for himself. He personally was a businessman all of his life. I mean, obviously, in his later years, he was no longer working. But he was in the sweater business and also in the diamond business for a while, and he earned his living as a private citizen. I think another important aspect of Mencium, besides his ability to interpret, well, the creative music, of course, and the ability to interpret the words, the texts to which he set the music, was the fact that he was not a performer. He didn't give concerts. He may have given a couple here and there, but the venue in which he sang was in shul as a baltfila, at shalashuris around the table, at a kumzitz in a private home or in a sukkah. He was not out there performing. The only time he really performed was on the recordings. That's when he performed. Otherwise, he was a humble, I use the phrase, self-effacing person. I remember David Alastone, whom you know very well, is a great fan of Ben Zion Schenker and also wrote an article which will appear in Jewish Action from his perspective assessing Ben Zion. He remembers a few years ago, Ben Zion was interviewed at some cantorial concert or something, and he went over to him. David went over to Ben Zion and said, "Can I have your autograph?" And Ben Zion was taken aback, like, "What, me? Who, me? Autograph? What autograph?" It was like not part of his expectation at all. That's the kind of person he was. He wasn't a performer. He was a genuine chassid, and his music was part of his avodas Hashem. That's what makes his music so spiritual. It's not a show that he's putting on. There's nothing wrong with a show to entertain people, but that's not what he was doing. He was there to teichais the verta, to teach the words, to teach the nigunim, and to lift people's spirits up in various ways through his melodies.
And do you think people outside the Mudgets world know a lot about him, and do you think now that he's passed away, you think there's going to be like a kind of a renaissance, like there was like a, with a Shlomo Kalbach kind of thing?
Interesting. I think yes, there will be. There has been a lot written about him already. He's just gone barely. I don't think it's been 2 months yet. Maybe 6 weeks ago that he passed away. And already you see all the magazines that are out there, the weeklies, etc., are writing about him from various perspectives. Don't forget, the man lived for over 90 years, so people knew him at various tikufos, at various times of his life, in various places, in various relationships, and that's all being written about. And I think his melodies will have somewhat of a renaissance. To compare him to Shlomo Kalbach is an interesting comparison, but of course they're very, very different people. Shlomo Kalbach was the essence, in the best sense, of a performer, of someone who was out there reaching the crowds, etc., traveling all over the world, a type of thing. Benzino was not that way at all. He was a very modest person, very private person, almost a shy person. Certainly compared to Shlomo Kalbach, he was a shy person. And his tunes generally are more nuanced, more complex than Shlomo Kalbach. Shlomo Kalbach's Nigunim usually have two stanzas, lower and a higher, lower and a higher. And that's it. And that gets to people's heart in an instant. Benzion's music is much more contemplative. Sometimes you'll have a Nigun, like Yossi Solayach, that's, you know, quite simple to sing. It just has two parts and it's a dance tune. But Mizmor LeDavid, for his example, is a bit more complex and much more nuanced.
It's interesting. It's interesting. So, I mean, he was really quite something. So, I want to end the interview with a question. So, I saw that in the article, you wrote that Benzion would always write different nigunim for simchas that would occur in the family, and if something happened, let's say there was a wedding, you know, in the Mudgets world, he would then write a nigun, which I presume that that night at the wedding they probably played that nigun and so on. Correct? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Not just the Mudgets world. Friends of his, family members,
right,
et cetera.
So you wrote that he, for your wedding, yours and Chavi's, he wrote Ki Malachov Yitzavelach.
Right.
And now, is this one of my favorite songs? Ki Malachov Yitzavelach.
Yes, indeed.
No kidding. You know what? Yeah. I saw the article. I said, I can't believe it. I really love that nigun. I knew it was a Mudgets nigun. And then when I read that he wrote it for your wedding, I said, aha, now I know why I like it. All right, now I got it. That's a beautiful nigun. I love that nigun. I always sing it every Friday night. I always sing that nigun. Fantastic. Unbelievable. Listen, I warn you, people don't know that, you know, you're a mumcha in a million different areas. Not everyone knows that you're a mumcha also on music. And it's, for people in the listening audience, Rabbi Weinreb is unbelievable as far as what he knows about Jewish music. And also, by the way, a fantastic Baal Tefillah. So thank you so much for writing the article and for coming on the show. And I think people are really going to enjoy it. So have a great day and thank you very much, okay?
Thank you very much for interviewing me and have a great day yourself.
You too. Be well. Bye-bye.